Randy Alcorn is founder and director of Eternal Perspective Ministries, former pastor. He's spoken around the world and taught on the adjunct faculties of Multnomah University and Western Seminary in Portland. Randy is the best-selling author of more than 60 books, including Happiness, Heaven, which is a really heavy, big book, If God is Good, and the award-winning novel Safely Home. He lives in Gresham, Oregon. He was married to Nancy 47 years before she passed away. Two married daughters, five grandsons. Randy, welcome back. How are you doing today?
Good, Chris. Always good to be with you. And I loved you talking about John Perkins, a dear friend and a wonderful brother. And wow, I just can't say enough about his impact on my life as well as countless others.
Well, he ran his race to the end. He's doing one of the things that we're going to talk about today is not coast, but he ran it all the way to the end. And that's why I really wanted to give this book, that book away this month, One Blood. Now, you just got back from a trip to Atlanta. Before we jump into the topic, you went to Atlanta. You went, it's a Passion City Church. It's Louis Giglio's place down there, right? And that to me, I've seen a couple of the videos. That looks like it was a pretty big deal. What happened down there?
Well, it was a powerful time. Todd Peterson, who has worked with Illuminations, Bible Translation, the Seed Company, former pro football player. He was a kicker for the Seahawks, Steelers, Falcons, others for years. But a guy who has become a dear friend over the years, and he, Louis wanted Todd to interview me. He's one of the elders there at Passion City. And so Todd interviewed me, and we talked about giving and investing our lives in eternity. And it turned out to be pretty powerful. I think Todd just asked some good questions and kind of teed it up for me, and great response from people. There was a little segment they put on Instagram and Facebook and other places and social media that had quite a reaction, where I just talked about Nancy and my conversations at the end of life and thanking each other for our lives.
That's it. And she was and is still a part of your ministry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting because we've posted fairly frequently things that she wrote and her journal, stories that people have told us about her impact on their lives. And being dead yet speaks, you know, that's that thing about Abel that's said in Hebrews. It's just like, wow. I mean, it's a powerful, she has died, but she's still speaking, and it's great.
Yeah. Randy Alcorn's with us today. And here's what I saw on his social media. And I had to go back, I had to scroll back through an awful lot. You and your team are really prolific with all these things. So I found this at the end of May. You said, in recent years, many cases of immoral relationships of Christian leaders, including those I have spoken with at various events, have happened with men in their 70s. Since I am 71, I take that very seriously. It should make us, all of us, should make us carefully examine our lives and take heed to Paul's warning, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall, 1 Corinthians 10:12, and Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. God help us all to guard our hearts and minds and be on alert, because the devil desires to destroy us. And so just that paragraph that you posted, I thought, I got to have Randy on to talk about that. So talk about it. Why'd you post that?
Well, first of all, I have turned 72 since then. That was just a few days ago, but not that that makes any difference, but just to be accurate, I'm now 72 and I can't believe it. You know, I think we're all amazed sometimes at how old we are. Yet what has hit me is I used to tend to think that, okay, most of the people that are falling into immorality, even in pastoral ministry, tend to be younger pastors, and maybe the sex drives were really particularly strong at that time in their lives. Maybe they're confused about different things. Maybe they're not married yet, or they're young marrieds and having trouble in their marriage, and they're not figuring things out, and terrible things are happening. And you tend to think, well, when a man's more older, more mature, and I'm not talking about just any man in general, but a Christian leader in particular, that he's got the resources available to him, God's word, indwelling spirit, hopefully accountability going on, people he works with. And it's been shocking to me that men that I have shared platforms with, there were four men in a 7-month period who fell into sexual sin or walked into sexual sin or ran into sexual sin. Fell is not always the right word for it. And I'm going, these are men I knew, and respected and was somewhat shocked. And it's hard to shock. I mean, you've been around the block like I have, Chris. You know that this happens all the time, but you still are sometimes shocked. And I think Ravi Zacharias was an example of that. I mean, he's a friend. He's somebody I thought I truly knew. And I've talked to the people on his board, worked with him. We just didn't see it coming, and yet it had been going on for year after year. So it just strikes me that there's no age cutoff on this thing, at least not one that I've seen yet. So
yes. Well, and what I get from the tone of what you just said, as well as what you wrote, it's not, you look how bad these people are and look at where they're from. It's like, I need to look at my own life.
Yes.
And I need to take an assessment for me, lest I fall, right?
Exactly. Self-examination. I mean, looking at ourselves, look to yourself, lest you too be tempted. And we are going to be tempted. And I'll tell you, self-righteousness and a dismissive attitude, that could never happen to me. In my book, The Purity Principle, I tell a story of when I was in Bible college, and one of the professors, my favorite professor, my freshman year of Bible college, he was terrific. And then the next thing I know, he's dismissed, but they're not explaining why. And some of us were really offended at first, because we go, well, what could he have done? Because we couldn't imagine that it was anything all that serious. And it turned out to be sexual immorality. And I remember how shocked I was. And he was, I would say, at least in his upper 60s at that time. And again, it just happens. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to know specifically on that sexual temptation. Why does it happen? Why does it happen to men in their 60s, 70s, or even older than that? It seems to me that there was an on-ramp. There was a long season of temptation that then the line was crossed, and then there was a long season of continual sin that was just not struggled with, but was given into. So talk to me about why. Why in the 70s have we seen this happen?
Yeah, I think it is a gradual thing often. You know, it doesn't come out of the clear blue sky. We may think it does. It's, you know, the people around are shocked, but we don't realize that just as it would be true in our lives, sin happens, sexual sin happens often after a long period of desensitization, little compromises, not huge ones, but they become huge, but only after we've tolerated them and lived with it and not even realized what's going on. So I think what can happen, some people who are in their 70s are retired, though these Christian men in ministry that I'm talking about had not retired. But I think what happens sometimes is the older somebody gets, the more he's trusted, and younger pastors might be in accountability groups, and it's just known that, you know, the elders of their churches are encouraged in who are you meeting with, who are you, but it's almost like we have this idea that when a man gets old enough, that this is not going to be a problem for him anymore. And that just simply is not true. Sometimes he feels like, okay, I'm past my peak. And so because I'm past my peak, maybe I want to prove something to myself. And so I'll entertain a relationship I shouldn't entertain. I'll compromise with the things that I'm watching on television. Sometimes it's a man. For instance, myself, my wife has died. And so when your wife has died, are you tempted to watch something that you wouldn't have watched with your wife? And I've been tempted sometimes to do that. Fortunately, largely because of the fear of God, not because of confidence in my ability to resist. It's been the fear of God. And I have a long list of consequences I wrote up many years ago when I was in my 20s. And I still look back at those about what would happen to me and my relationships with family, my grandchildren. I have 5 grandsons. It would be so devastating for them. I've talked to each of them about purity in their lives. But why it happens, I think we get desensitized and also we stop paying attention and we become presumptuous and thinking we're going to do okay kind of on our own and just watch something that you wouldn't have watched a while back and your standards are just dropping.
Yeah. And that I have a friend who is a widower and who writes and who even I think it was this week he wrote and he said, this is a real struggle for me because I'm thinking about, you know, should I get remarried or not? He's 70 plus. Should I get remarried or not? Because his wife passed away not long ago. And that temptation, you hear about this, not with Christian men who are leaders, but Christian men who are moving in with a woman who is this of the same age type of thing and compromising right that way. So it's interesting that you will bring this up because several people on that Facebook post about the dangers, snares, and traps for Christian men in their 70s, one of the words that came up again and again was isolation.
Right.
That they are isolated from others. That fits in here, doesn't it?
It does. And you can be a popular on the circuit, the Christian circuit speaker. You can travel extensively. You can show up places, you can receive a lot of praise from people, and you have, you know, men and women, but women who will come up to you and flatter you, and they may be completely innocent, but just, oh, that was the best message I've ever heard. You are such a wonderful teacher of God's word, and it's, you know, we can be flattered in the area of our spirituality, even when really it's more a giftedness that comes from God and maybe some skills that, you know, we've honed over the years, but most of the credit doesn't go to us. God's given us this stuff. But boy, I tell you, if you don't learn to deflect that praise, and I don't mean deny it. I don't mean like, oh no, don't ever say to me that was a good message. You know, no, that, you know, it's appropriate if it was a good message, but I mean, you can become seduced by flattery. Proverbs talks about that. And a man can listen to a woman's words, even when she's not intending to be seductive, she's attractive and it feels that way. And then pretty soon you're having coffee and now you've got this relationship. And some of these men, it was women in other part of the country that they've met when traveling and speaking Christian conferences, and then had carried on an ongoing relationship, and then saw them when they came back to the city again, and immorality took place, and yeah, it's a trap.
I don't want to do too much with the spiritual warfare thing or the enemy having a field day, but I feel like this is, because both are true. We are our own worst enemies. I don't need the devil doing anything in my life because I do enough myself, you know? But there is, it feels like, especially with Christian leaders, older Christian, mature Christian leaders who are falling this way, that there is, it's almost as if it were an attack and glee from the forces of hell. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I agree so much. We have a target on us. Every one of us who is in any kind of Christian ministry or leadership, that includes you, it includes me, it includes a number of people listening, and maybe you're an elder at your church. Our church is always kind of working through issues and challenges, and pastors and elders are working through things. When I was pastor of the church, we were always working through things, and I see sometimes men just getting worn down. And that when you're worn down, when you're tired, you're not sleeping well, you got a lot on your mind, you become more vulnerable. You know, I find myself more tempted to watch the wrong thing on TV or not turn the channel immediately, whatever, when something bad comes on or when I see it coming. I mean, I think that's one of the things too, is that you can't just, you know, oh, I'll turn it off when she takes her clothes off. No, that's too late. I mean, of course you should turn it off if you haven't yet, but the point is you don't let it get to that. And so use VidAngel. I used VidAngel for virtually everything. And VidAngel will screen out, it's just one of many things that's out there, screen out the wrong stuff. But if you're not careful, you'll just succumb to it. And maybe your rationalization is, hey, I'm an old guy now. It's not going to happen to me. Yeah. Well, it can, and it does.
But, you know, going back to what Jesus said about in your heart, it's like you can have the thing on the VidAngel for your TV or your device, you know, your smartphone, you can have all that. And still in your heart, it's what's in your heart that is fomenting that lust, that of, well, Kevin says lust, pride, arrogance, ego. That's the dangers, snares, and traps. And he says, hey, these are the same issues in my 40s as well as those in their 70s. And he's right, isn't he?
Right, exactly. And I think this is where don't ever think that this is going to go away. Like okay, so when a man's unmarried, then he thinks, oh, this will go away once I'm married because I have the proper outlet of sexual relationship in marriage. But sexual temptation does not go away. And so now he thinks that somehow all problems were going to be solved, but they're not all solved because we are sinners and we have powerful urges that God has created, you know, in our bodies. And let's face it, it wasn't Satan that created the sex drive. But the problem is it's like water or fire. You know, the things that have the greatest power, the greatest potential for good also have the greatest potential for evil. So what would we do without water, right? I mean, water is absolutely essential to life. But have you ever seen a flood? You ever seen a tsunami? You ever seen someone you love that drowned? You know, same thing with fire. Fire is a great gift of God. I mean, what we couldn't cook food without it. We couldn't, I mean, this combustion, you know, it's essential. Our cars drive around because there's something related to the ignition and all of that and the spark. And yet, fire, a forest fire, a home burned down, a lifetime of memories destroyed in a heartbeat. So that's the way it is with sex, gift of God, but watch out for that gift and the mishandling of it.
I do want to get in here, though, for those who are saying, okay, you know, this is the unpardonable sin. No, God's grace and mercy is available no matter what you've done, no matter how far you've gone, right? And so I want people to hear that. But if you really want to follow hard, take up your cross and follow Jesus, you're going to deal with this, and partly with, you know, your devices. Also, those having some friends. I don't know that I like the word accountability anymore because it feels, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
But there are things that you can do in your life that will make you non-isolated so that there are other people speaking into your life and you speaking into their life as well. Here's what I like to do, Randy. I want to open the phone lines, 877-548-3675. Is there any man, woman listening right now who resonates with what Randy is talking about, these dangers, especially of sexual temptation in your 70s and beyond? Does that ring true to you? Have you lived in the fallout of that? I want to hear your story, 877-548-3675. But I also want to pivot to the other dangers, snares, and traps for Christian men and women who are in their 70s. Because Carolyn went to Matthew chapter 13 as soon as I posted this up, and she said, the worries of this life and deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. What would you say about worry, Randy?
Well, it's interesting because the Greek word, it's translated worry, or one of them, literally is the dividing of the mind. And so I think what happens is worry distracts us. Worry concerns us, sometimes obsesses us. It's got that deeply emotional, aspect to it, relates to fear, to dread, and it doesn't work in our favor. And that's why Jesus actually commands us not to worry. And you think, well, everybody worries. And it's like, well, everybody does, but that doesn't mean we should. We need to have a bigger view of God. We need to look at the sovereignty of God, trust God, and make wise decisions, because many of the worries we have, we contribute to and sometimes create in their entirety. Materialism, you know, the love of money, all those kinds of things. And certainly the love of money really relates to sexual immorality. Statistically, the greater an income someone has, the greater the chances of them committing adultery. Studies have proven that. Yeah.
Wow. One more, and then we'll go to your phone calls. Not mentoring the younger generation, meaning just kind of coasting along and not looking at the responsibility and the opportunity you have to speak into the lives of those who are coming up behind you. What do you say about that?
Oh, gosh, that is so true. And that's really convicting, too, because I have a close relationship with my five grandsons who are all teenagers or older. One of them got married last summer. Another one's getting married this summer. But these are guys who I look and I go, have I recently sent articles their way, recommended something, sent them a copy of one of my books or booklets that can be read on this? And then I'm thinking, I have with a few, but not with some of the others. And it was convicting to me when that was said, you know, the next generation. Yeah.
Gary is in Florida. Gary, why did you call today?
Well, I was just going to share that when I ask, I go on dating sites because, you know, divorce. And I ask married people, I go, you know why people go like on Match or these dating sites? And they never know. And I go, loneliness drives everybody to the dating sites.
Right.
And that starts the process. If you're going to get off track, you know, that's why people are there. It's very interesting.
Yeah. What do you say about that, Randy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, loneliness is... It's a sickness of the soul, I don't mean it's because people are bad. I mean, everyone needs company. Everybody needs companionship. Everybody needs friendship. And there are good ways to, find it and bad ways to find it. And some people, meet other people at church and an older singles group or whatever it might be. And then the church can actually become a sort of a means to pursuing an immoral relationship, not because the church wants it to be that way or anyone wants it to be that way. It's just the fact of life. Somebody who's been married before is accustomed to maybe having had a sexual relationship that they now do not have. They miss it, and so they have these desires and urges, and so a lot of caution needs to take place, and people need to speak into each other's lives, and directors of those ministries and churches, you know, certainly need to be very alert to that and to warn people and encourage them, to avoid immorality, because it is not just that it's wrong, it's that it's stupid. It's going to kill you. You know, he who, commits adultery, he who sleeps with another man's wife shall not go unpunished. And those are the warnings of Scripture.
Yeah. I think that's in Proverbs, right? Is that
right?
Okay. Gary, thanks for your call. Mike is on the line. Mike, why did you call today?
Well, I stopped my car and pulled over when I heard this because I'm going through the same thing. And you've given me a lot of good advice. A lot of good advice. And everything you're saying is true. And I'm going through this grieving process. And I try to rationalize my thinking. And the devil tells me certain things and God tells me the other. And it's like I'm going crazy here. But I know what path I should be following. And I know when God's telling me something, and I know when the Satan's telling me something. Right. And you know what? I'm lonely. I'm lonely for my wife. And that's what Satan's working me at. Well,
how long has it been, Mike? How long has it been since she passed away?
Oh, about a month and a half, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I want a woman. But then God, how do I get a woman? Oh, go to church. You'll find a good Christian there. But not necessarily. There's hang-ups there, too, if I'm just trying to do that to get any woman. No, I want God to lead me to the right woman, not for me to be just get any woman because I'm so lonely, you know, and miss my wife. So everything you're saying is just unbelievable. I'm going through every one of those things. But I'm trusting God. I'm trusting God, and I do think that going to church, and that's what I'm starting to do, going to church and looking for a woman, because I'm lonely as heck. And
this program, Mike, the whole reason why I did this program might be for you, Mike. And I'm just thinking every now and then I'll hear a call or see a name up here and a question. It's like, well, this is the whole reason why Randy posted that almost a month ago, and I saw it, and here we are. So speak into the life of Mike, Randy.
Yeah, I would say do go to church. Go to church because the right thing to do first to seek God. But that doesn't mean it ends with seeking God. It begins with seeking God, and that should be the center of it. But of course we need human relationships. The church is the body of Christ. We need to be connected with people. You have to be careful, of course, because, it's like we're talking about fire and water, which can be so great. And man, when they're out of control, they're devastating. So you can end up just seeking companionship and friendship. And it can be innocent at first, but then you get into a situation, and before you know it, if you're committing immorality, you're not only dishonoring God, you're not only hurting yourself, you're hurting someone else. And this happens all the time. So much of it is we're part of a culture where it assimilates into the church the way it does its society at large. I mean, the bar has been lowered. The bar of morality has been lowered, and people feel the freedom to do things that they didn't used to feel the freedom to do. Now, it's always been a problem, of course, but it's all the more problem if you start compromising, and this is where we have to guard our hearts, guard our lives, make wise choices. And one of the things I say in my sexual temptation booklet is, if you're on a diet, don't go to a donut shop. You know, it's just like, because what am I going to do? And don't read donut magazines. And don't read, you know, because what are you going to end up doing? You're going to end up eating donuts. And if that's
don't
not what you want to do.
Don't walk by the bakery either. If you walk by the bakery,
exactly.
You know, it's the same thing because that aroma makes it causes
exactly.
you to. But you can't take away the desire. And I hear it in Mike. It's like, I want to love my wife. I want a wife and I want to love her. But I wonder if this situation, and it's only been a month. And Mike, God bless you.
There'll
be people around the country who will be praying for you. But is it really is the need for a wife? Is there a woman? I need a woman. Or is God, I need you to take the place of this, you know, to fill this hole in my soul that I am feeling right now. What do you say about that?
Oh, I think that's so true because so often we think it's like when you think, oh, I just want to buy a new house. I just want to buy a new car. And then what happens? You buy the new car and it does not fulfill your life. I mean, you have a month where you're feeling great, you know, and then something happens, you know, the car gets scratches, or even if it doesn't get scratches, the point is it just is not going to fill up your soul. So we're constantly, like it's an anesthetic, we're going after different things that we think will fulfill us. And you see it in Ecclesiastes and you just end up empty. But the pursuit of God, the God in all of his goodness and holiness and grace and kindness. I think the friendship of Jesus has been huge for me since Nancy died. He's always been my friend. I no longer call you servants. I call you friends. Now, of course, we still are servants, but those were his words. So that's what I'm saying. And the point is, the friendship of Jesus means so much to me and brings me such great comfort and helps me when I'm really missing Nancy to say, you know what? I don't have to have, God could give me another relationship, remarriage. It's been 4 years and I have not been anything close to that. But he still could do it if he wants to, but he's going to have to do it. And I don't think a lot of people realize the cost and the investment of developing a new relationship, taking on new family members, growing kids and grandkids that may be on drugs, that may be, I mean, there are so many complications to solving the loneliness problem prematurely or in the wrong way.
Yeah. Father, thank you for Mike. Thank you for his heart, for the struggle that he's in, how honest he's been with us here today. Yes. I know there's somebody listening who's in that same situation who didn't call, but you gave Mike the courage to do that. So thank you for the desire that he has, the good desire that he has for a relationship and that he wants to honor you with it. Would you draw very close to him right now, and would you give him encouragement? And thank you for my friends who are praying for Mike, and I pray in Jesus' name. What are the other temptations? There are a lot of people who are talking about isolation and about lust and pride. Kim says, coasting to the end, not using those years well to further the gospel, to meet needs around them, thinking that you're not relevant enough or spry enough to make a difference in your church or your neighborhood or your extended family. We have a group in our church called Men of Mercy. They've kept my dad busy through his 70s and into his 80s. They help single women and widows with whatever they need around the house or with their car. It's a blessing to everyone involved. So the lie is, you get to a certain age, you're not going to struggle with that, or you're not relevant anymore. We don't need you around. That's not true, is it?
No, it is not. And I remember years ago, and many people will probably remember this if they're familiar with John Piper and his ministry, but when he wrote the book, Don't Waste Your Life, and was speaking at passion conferences and different places about this and told the story of, you know, a guy who retires And now he's spending his time picking up seashells on a beach. Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong to pick up seashells on a beach. Okay, that's not the point. But the point is, the new passion in life is just picking up seashells, just going out every day at the beach and more. And it could be golf. It could be whatever it might be. Things that are not bad in and of themselves. But is that what you want to do with your life? Is that the high calling of God for your life in retirement? Retirement should actually give you more opportunity than you've ever had to serve Jesus. I mean, in some respects, I mean, of course, you serve Jesus through the job that you have. But the point is, there's a freedom to choose more broadly now, and I can go here, I can do this, I can volunteer with this organization, and you can be used of God to do great things in people's lives. And I know a lot of retired men and women who are serving God in beautiful ways and finding great joy in them. But I know a lot of others that are sitting in front of a television or just doing all kinds of stuff that's supposed to bring them satisfaction, but just doesn't.
And they don't like it, and they don't want to live that way. But it's hard to – it's like we had Alan Parr on Monday, and the enemy's lie was, you can never change. This is going to be the way – whatever addiction you have, this is the way it's always going to be. And that's not true. Jill said, I'd say the same issues bother women as well. Isolation, not feeling valued, worrying about the what ifs, you know, my health fails, I become a burden to those I love, I have to give up driving or my home of many years. The older generation is deemed ignorant these days by TV and movies. No longer are we honored for living a life and sharing what we've learned along the way, so the next generation learns from it. We're kind of marginalized and pushed aside. So you can stay in that, you know, or you can say, no, I'm not going to be a victim to that. I'm going to transcend it. But that takes some courage and fortitude, doesn't it?
It does, and it takes initiative on our part, the courage to step into somebody's life and say, hey, just so you know, I'm your next door neighbor and I'm retired or whatever it is. I see you out here working on your lawn. I've got more time than I used to. Would you like some help with some of the projects around here? And I mean, most people aren't going to turn that down. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't turn it down.
Me either.
Let me give everybody my phone number now. And so they'll call me and help me on my lawn. But no, but seriously, it's like something where you go, and while we work on our lawn together, we can share life together. And it can meet your needs. It can meet my needs. It can meet. I've been in a group the last 4 years since Nancy died. For most of that time, been in a group of eight guys, and the next oldest guy in the group is 20 years younger than I am, and then it goes all the way down to a couple of guys. Well, one in his 20s and one in his 30s. Most of the guys are in their 40s. And so here I am, the old guy, but what a privilege to be with these guys. It's so fun. I mean, it's good for me. I hope it's good for them because I can bring some life experience, ministry experience to a couple of them are pastors that maybe is of some value to them. But meanwhile, my needs are being met as well.
Bingo. It is such a treat to get to talk with you, Randy. Thank you for being available. I know you're busy and you're traveling around, you're speaking and the Atlanta thing. Friends, look up the Passion City Church where Randy spoke and watch those videos that have come out. It'll touch you deeply. But for you to write about this and then come on here and talk, I can see from the response of folks that people are very thankful, grateful to you. Keep doing what you're doing, friend. And in the fall, you're coming back because there's a book that you've written about animals, I believe.
That's right. All God's Creatures is coming out in the fall.
Oh, it's going to be so fun. All right, Randy, God bless you. Come back and see us, okay?
You too, Chris.